I'm Clint Emerson, and welcome to Season 2 of Can You Survive This Podcast, where the interview is just as dangerous as the scenarios I put my guests through. From hostage situations to natural disasters, carjackings, active shooters, and more, if you're looking for the skills necessary to survive these situations, then this is the show for you. Hey, you five listeners, I really do appreciate that you guys stay with me and actually listen to this shit. Today, I've got a human performance specialist. She's actually a badass. She's trained me. She's trained all kinds of athletes, both on the field and in the water. She's a certified strength and conditioning specialist, a licensed athletic trainer, holds a master's, super smart, from Arizona, residing in Seattle. Jamie Lafleur, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Did I butcher your last name? Is it Lafleur or Lafleur?
You did not. No. You said it right. It's Lafleur. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's funny because I laugh a lot. You get it. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. But I usually fuck those things up. I blame it on my TBI or something. I don't know. So as you know, we kick it off with a little bit of rapid fire. As a warm up, and some of this is going to relate to, you know, what you do for a living. And plus, it's still the beginning of the year with all these people with their little resolutions.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
So we can get that resolution education out there for those that say, hey, I'm going to just start working out. And then they don't, and they wait till next year. Are you ready?
I am. Let's do it.
Okay. Hit, HIIT, or run.
Depends on your goal. So when it comes to human performance,
here we go.
It always depends. It always depends.
That's right.
So like when I have new interns, they get driven crazy by me because the answer is always, it depends. Uh-huh. So based on your goal, if you want to run a marathon, if you are doing an active sport that involves running, run. If not, there's nothing wrong with HIIT.
Okay. Well, which one would you pick?
I hate to run, so I do HIITs.
All right, you're
right. Yes.
And so for those that don't know, that's high-intensity interval training. What is that?
High-intensity interval training is where you work at a certain ratio of on time or exercise time with off time or rest time. And what that allows you to do is work at a much higher intensity for short periods that add up to a longer overall time, but allows you to rest and recover in your downtime. So that way you can keep a higher heart rate, higher performance output, higher power output, et cetera, during that on time, because you have that up and down of on to off, rather than just trying to stretch it out a long continuous session where you would start to slowly decline throughout that period because you aren't able to recover.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's a great way of explaining it. Now, what's the optimum kind of on off? Is it like 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, or is that another one?
It just depends. Yeah. Okay. Typically you want to start, depending on what you're doing, but you want to start with a like 1-3 on to off ratio. So that could be 30 seconds of really hardcore sprinting and a minute, 30 seconds off, or 10 seconds of hardcore sprinting, 30 seconds off. That's going to be more of a like field-based athlete. Or it could be, you can slowly work down to 1-2, 1-1, or even 1-0.5 where your rest is even lower. But again, it's going to depend on what's your overall goal. So you'd want to match it to what the event or what the sport is. And then also to, are you just getting into this kind of training or have you been doing it for a while? What a lot of people do is just, you know, go balls to the wall and totally burn themselves out and be like, holy shit, my body hurts. This is terrible. And then they stop, which is not, you know, not sustainable. So taking the slow approach and building into it is what we really want to do.
Yeah. I like that. I never do that. I actually do the whole, like,
no.
if I'm doing like, let's say for example, the easy button for me when it comes to HIIT is like with kettlebells, right?
Yeah.
I can take a kettlebell and I can do 15 seconds of, let's say, snatching with my right arm, 15 seconds off, 15 mm-hmm. seconds with my left, 15 mm-hmm. seconds off, 15 seconds with my right, and back and forth. And then usually I'll go, okay, I'm just going to try this for 5 minutes today. And I barely get there, but I'll get my five. And then maybe a week later, you know, and I add 30 seconds, yeah, you know, as the, yeah. So, but that's one for one. I probably should start with more like 15 and, yeah, and 45, mm-hmm, 15, 45. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably get more out of it.
Well, that's, and that'll, yeah, that'll allow you to have a much higher intensity with the longer rest period. But if you wanted to even flip it and say go 45 seconds on, where you're just getting into a flow and it's not necessarily for power, and 15 seconds off, say it's, again, it all depends on what you're going for.
Yeah. No, I like that. Cool. Okay. Next one. Avocado or kale?
Avocado, 100%. I eat on average one whole avocado a day. Yeah. Not really friendly to my bank account, but that's okay. I'll take it.
Right. I mean, they're both kind of sort of considered superfood still, or what?
I don't know who decides what a superfood is.
Yeah. I'm always like, somebody said it's healthy, but kale, I think I have to do a lot to kale in order to eat it.
Yeah. What I still can't wrap my mind around is the fact that for so long it was a garnish on dishes at restaurants. And it wasn't an actual like food.
Right. That's right.
Might be saying something. I don't know.
It's like they used to throw rice on top of it or something, right? To make it look pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. Avocados, man, I can eat those all day long. Now, what's the, I mean, it's the good fats. Is that really the biggest takeaway from avocado?
Avocados, they have a surprising amount of fiber too, if I'm not incorrect on that one. But yeah, it's the healthy fats that we need. Avocado oil, you know, same thing, or your olive oils. A lot of people think that fat is bad. You know, it was the whole thing back in the 90s with the Atkins diet and whatnot, but we need fat. It's super important for our bodies. Fat helps surround all of our nerves and it helps with our brain function, helps keep your muscles healthy. And when we see people who have too low of body fat, they actually tend to have really high risk of muscle strains and injuries. So yeah, healthy fats, super good for you.
Oh, so I'm doing great. Okay, good. Right. Make me feel so healthy much fats. Better. Yeah. It's healthy. Yeah. So I look great in a t-shirt. It's all that matters.
There you go.
Protein shake or a steak? You know where I'm going with this.
I mean, indeed. Uh-huh. So if you are finishing up your workout and you're about to go have a meal, you can skip the protein shake and you can just go and have the steak. Because we want the protein. We want all of our essential amino acids, but we do also want some kind of carbohydrate replacement. So steak and a baked potato would be awesome. If you're not going straight home and having a meal, grab your shake. It'll be just as fine for you.
Yeah. I think, so if you have the option to have real whole protein,
you want to go for that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, it's hard to know what supplements are like legit. Right. I mean, there's still this decades later, we're still buying protein shake powders and not really knowing what's going on inside that thing. Right.
Right. It's really crazy. Of course, you want to look for the special certifications that are on them, especially if you're any kind of college athlete, with those, especially baseball for certain. But what's really crazy is when you see just like the big tubs of like the protein and the creatine and leucine and like the different products. I'm always like, well, where did this actually come from? Like, how was this made? I don't understand. Uh-huh. But yeah, whole foods are what's the best choice. If you are able to access them, what's really important is that you're just getting in the proper amount of protein and carbohydrate within an hour to 2 hour window after you work out. Some more recent studies are just saying, as long as you get that protein intake throughout the 24 hour day, you're okay. But for me, I still err on the side of being safe, keep it within the hour after working out. I love to eat, so it's fairly easy for me to make that happen.
Okay. I think I know the answer, but we're going to go with what you like to do. Strength or cardio, but we already know.
Strength.
Yes.
For sure. Strength. I love to lift. I love to lift heavy. I do cardio. Don't think that I don't. But if I had a choice between hitting my back squats and going for a run, I will do the back squats all day.
Yeah. Yep. Now you've trained a lot of these professional athletes. Obviously, I've been amongst them at Exos here in Frisco. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've got a favorite, but I just kind of went with, you know, NFL versus NBL. Who do you?
Oh, versus NBA? That is such a hard one. Yeah. That's almost like comparing a Tuesday and a Wednesday. It's like they're both great days, but they're both different in their, you know, their own aspect.
But you know which ones put out more than the others.
I do.
There's a trend, I'm sure I can there figure is, out, but I'll let you answer it.
Oh, shoot. You're putting me on the spot. I enjoy coaching. Oh my gosh, this is so hard. So NFL is really great because they're aggressive. They hit the weights hard. They just have, it's like listening to a really hard rap song. And then NBA, they will also lift. And they're just a little bit more easygoing and laid back. And it's like listening to an R&B song almost. And they're both just, you know, they're fantastic based on how you're feeling that day. But overall, I really do love NFL. I do. I love football athletes and just the variety of body shapes and sizes and skills and techniques that come in with that sport. It's really, really fun to work with.
Yeah, they are. They are a lot of fun. I remember the first time I went through an Exos, I was with NFL kids in the morning and I was with NBA guys in the afternoon. Yeah. And the NBA guys were like, I ain't doing those squats. You know, NBA, it's a technical sport. Basketball's a technical sport. I don't need all this shit. They were pretty funny, but I agree. Yeah. I would say, NFL is like hardcore rock and roll. And NBA is like reggae, you know. let's just smoke some pot, you know, during the workout hour.
Yeah, let's just chill.
Yeah. But those guys are amazing across the board. We know. Okay, you know, I'm kind of going in here. Oh, drive or fly?
Fly.
Drive or fly? You fly?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like to fly. Yeah. I'll stare out the window the whole time. Always gonna have a window seat. I love to travel. I absolutely love to travel. I do it as much as I can. So for me, flying gets me there sooner, which means I can do more stuff. Yeah. I'm the kind of person on vacation that wakes up early so I can go and do the most, which some people think is ludicrous, but I like to enjoy my time.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. What's your favorite? Have you a favorite place that you've been so far?
So last year I actually went to Hawaii twice and it was absolutely incredible. I did about a week in Oahu, about a week in Maui. And when I think like, Jamie, what were the most happiest times in your life? And it was definitely after hiking through the jungle, finding some waterfalls, climbing up the cliff face and just being like you and the waterfall in the middle of nowhere in nature. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Do you have any like dream destinations? Like, okay, it's on the list. I'm going to go to.
Yeah. So I'm not really much of a bucket list person, but one place that is definitely on my bucket list is actually Hawaii. On the Big Island is the Keck Observatory. And that is somewhere that I really want to go and see the stars. For me, a big issue with society that I feel is the fact that we don't see the stars anymore. We're not humbled by how big the universe is. And we don't realize how small that we are and how unimportant our little life is on the long span of what time is. And we just have our heads so far up our asses that we think we're the most important thing in the world. Seeing the stars for me always just reminds me like there's so much more to my problems at work, or there's so much more to having to pay my car note every month and that kind of thing. So being able to go there into the Keck Observatory is something that I really, really want to do.
Yeah. It sounds like you're the kind of person that wants to just, you find an area and then you want to see all of it before you move on to something new. Is that it?
Yeah. I mean, really to be able to understand it. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you bring up the stars. It's kind of odd because the next one is Bigfoot or aliens?
Aliens.
Aliens.
Really, really cool. Yeah. I haven't seen Bigfoot yet up here in the Pacific Northwest. Definitely not real. not real.
But that's where it's supposedly at, right? Sasquatch
is supposed to be out here. Yeah. So you'll see bumper stickers and t-shirts and everything. Like Sasquatch is the best hide and seek competitor out there. It's just, it's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah. So aliens. Yeah. I'm with you. I think it's overwhelming sometimes to look at those stars and go, wow, like that goes forever.
Forever. Yeah. We literally can't understand it. Like we do not have the capacity to understand how big the universe is. And it is absurd.
Yeah. It is pretty cool. I've been talking to my daughter about how we would get you know, when we die, we always kind of do the whole like, what do you want, Dad? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Are you planning something that I should be aware of? But it really boils down to like, I've always said, hey, I just want to be, you know, cremated, put in a capsule and shot to space. Right.
Really?
Just go forever.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if wherever you land and who knows what your ashes could turn into, you know,
right.
Sky's the limit
true.
When space is infinite. But then we got to thinking, like, how you could capitalize on this with rockets becoming more and more available. Mm. And you've got now people with big money being able to take a ride, a joyride on them. Why not start a space graveyard? Because we're running out of land, right? We're going to eventually run out of land.
That's actually a good idea.
And you could put, I was like, honey, you can put me in orbit. And then every time I pass over, you're like, there goes Dad. Oh, no. Okay, he'll be back in 15 seconds.
They're
here he comes.
There goes Dad.
Oh, no, now he's coming. Oh, wait, 15 seconds. 1, 2, 3. Oh, there he goes again. You know, and then you could like create an app that shows you where Dad is
where
going
at.
Around around the planet. And then
yeah,
you could have just
pretty sick.
Hundreds of thousands of people just cruising around the Earth, you know?
In theory, on surface level, it's great. When it comes to like satellites and space junk, I don't know.
Well, yeah, we would be space junk. We would turn into space junk. I mean, I think that's a good goal. I want to die and be space junk. Okay. Now we're approaching this whole Valentine's thing. Are you a Valentine's person?
No, absolutely not. I'm not a holiday person. When it comes to holidays, it's like I don't need a date on the calendar to tell me to celebrate something. I don't need a date to tell me to be thankful for people. I don't need a date to go and celebrate loving people. When I find a gift for somebody, I buy it then and I give it to them then because it shows them I'm thinking about them all the time and I care about them all the time. The one holiday I do like is birthdays. And that's because for me, I think we take them for granted. Never know how long I have here, how many birthdays you'll see. So that's the one that I can get behind.
I like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, I like the fact that you're not like into all the holidays, like, oh, because I mean, that's a, you know, this coming out around Valentine's, I would say, you know, for guys, it's kind of a one way deal, you know?
Yeah.
It's like there's this pressure that's really unnecessary on a day that I don't even honestly know what the hell Valentine's means anymore. I probably did know at one point, but I don't know anymore.
I couldn't tell you what the origin is. I just know. I think it's the highest making like candy sale of the year, isn't it? Valentine's Day?
Yeah, something.
Yeah, like
well, that's what I was going to ask. So I was going to ask, flowers or candy?
Candy, definitely. Chocolate, yes.
Yeah, that's funny. Chocolate, I think, is always a winner when it's up against flowers.
You can't eat a flower. Just look at it. Like,
unless the flowers are made out of chocolate, then okay.
There you go.
You're listening to Can You Survive This Podcast? Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and share on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. Okay, mom or dad?
Mom.
Mom. Why?
Yeah, mom. My mother, love to hate her. Mostly love her. So she is a very, very hardworking, loving, compassionate, caring person. Long story short, growing up, we were a foster family. So my family took in foster kids and she helped care for and raise over 48 foster kids within 8 years.
Damn.
And yeah, very, very incredible person.
Wait, say that again. 48 kids.
48
over
foster kids came through our home.
Over how many years ago? Eight?
8 years. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Holy crap. Now you're biological.
I'm biological. Correct. Okay. I'm biological. I've got 4 adopted siblings. And yeah, just seeing how she navigated those avenues of dealing with the paternal or the biological parents, dealing with taking these kids to, you know, the meetings with their families, seeing how she made these bonds and attachments with these kids that we had sometimes for 2-3 years and had to either, you know, give back to the parents who we knew weren't that great sometimes or have them be adopted out or what have you. It was a really incredible experience that, of course, as a 10-year-old, you don't realize how it's going to impact your life. But the amount that she has given of herself to other people is really inspiring. It's pretty awesome.
Now, did you ever feel left out or kind of like, hey,
yeah,
why?
I've been in therapy because of all this. All of us biological kids have, because the negative side of it was we never really felt as if we were enough as biological kids, because mom always had to have other kids coming into the house.
How many of you, how many real brother and sisters you have?
I have two biological siblings. The older brother underneath me. Yeah. And then four adopted.
Okay. Got it. And then you had all these other kids coming in.
Yeah. There. Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bet. Mm-hmm. Holy crap.
Yeah.
And then, so let's see, that's a lot of mouths to feed too. So how'd that work?
It is.
You like first come, first serve until you ran out, or?
So it's really funny you ask that. We always had family dinners. But when it came to things like ice cream drumsticks, there's only six in a box, which meant that not everyone was going to get a drumstick. And if dad came home and ate two, it was a real problem. Lots of big family dinners. Now for Christmases and stuff, we do Secret Santa. That way we're not buying for all the siblings and whatnot. Not that I would choose to do that anyway, because I don't like holidays.
but, there you go. Now I see why you don't like holidays. There's a much big, deeper meaning here.
Yeah. But it was interesting.
Sounds like it. That's cool. Well, then when you're surrounded growing up with all these kids, like what set you down the path of where you're at now?
Yeah. So I have quite a different story when it comes to being a strength and conditioning coach. Yeah. I wasn't really an athlete past an age that mattered. I played sports up until like 12. I should have really been an individual sport athlete, like a diver or swimmer. But I'd played team sports like as a kid. And what really upset me was when people didn't try their best. And I was like, well, we're stuck on the same team. I'm trying my best. You are not. Like, fuck that. You know, I'm out of here. Maybe then not the right approach as a 12-year-old. Oh, well. But I started as an athletic training student in high school, actually. So literally just walking down the hallway, and our athletic trainer was sitting next to one of my friends. And my friend was like, oh, hey, she'd be good. And our AT was like, oh, hey, do you play any sports? I'm like, no, you should know that. You're the athletic trainer. You should know all your athletes, whatever. He's like, you want to be an athletic trainer? I was like, yeah, sure. My friend's older brother had did it. I knew that he liked it. I love sports and wasn't currently playing a sport. It's like, yeah, let me get involved. I love working with people. So I started at 15 years old in our athletic training room in high school, working football, wrestling, soccer, everything under the sun that we had at our high school. Went to undergrad for athletic training. And then in grad school, I was a grad assistant athletic trainer at San Diego State and Arizona State. Worked with water polo and football at ASU. And when I was done with that, I interned at Exos there in Phoenix as a performance specialist. And that's when I was really like, this is awesome. I had done a lot of work in weight rooms throughout college, because as an athletic trainer, you shadow in the weight room. You're there in case anyone gets hurt, if there's a medical emergency, et cetera. And of course, there's a lot of corrective exercise and exercise classes that you take as well. But it was really that time that I spent as an intern at Exos that I was like, this is for me. I love this. Because for me, it's all about the person. It's understanding who is Clint. Mm-hmm. How can I speak to Clint? How can I understand you and not necessarily see you as, okay, this guy is a retired Navy SEAL, or, oh, this is just a football player. I'm going to coach the football player. No, you need to understand that person and speak to that person in order to really make them the best that they can be, and have their trust and get that buy-in and communicate well. Once someone realizes that you care about them and who they are, you can get them to do basically anything within reason in the training world. That's my story in a little 2-minute spiel.
Yeah, I like it. And going kind of backwards on some of this. So I know that when I was training with you, or you were training me, you went to China and
I
had an opportunity to like train there. Yeah. Was it the water polo or who was it?
Water polo is one of them. Yeah. So, man, so good. It was such an incredible opportunity. And I miss going there. COVID obviously shut that down. But I went to China Tola 5 times over about a year and a half. Spent 2 months like all put together over there. I was in a city called Tianjin, which is just outside of Beijing. It's like their industrial side. Small city of 14 to 15 million people, you know, just a few.
No kidding.
But while I was there, I was working with a provincial team. So it's a step under the national team, working aquatic. So water polo, synchronized swimming, swimming, diving. And it was an amazing experience. Very, very immersive. It was not like touristy. I was staying in their training center in their dorms. I was eating their food next to them. I was with them basically all the time. We had a translator and she'd, you know, walk down to the mall with us or, you know, do this, that, or the other. But we'd oftentimes rent the bikes and ride them around town and try not to get hit by taxis and motorcycles and all that kind of thing. But it was really something else.
And how was their discipline compared to like US athletes? I mean,
It was incredible. We coached a lot of kids. I coached a lot of kids when I was there. I think the youngest was 7. And they would have 7-year-olds training alongside 30-year-olds, like in the same group. What sense that makes? No idea.
Nobody knows their birthday, right? So they can go to the Olympics.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we know how they operate.
But really. And I never had to yell at a child for being loud or talking over me. I never had to get onto somebody for like dicking around over on the side. Because the way they discipline there is different than how we discipline here. We're a little soft over here, but we also aren't really abusive either when it comes to using discipline. I did not see this with my own eyeballs. I was told of it by a coworker who had been in China for years. But this person was working with Swim and Dive, and he saw a diver climb up to the high dive, which is the 10 meter, so 30 feet ish. And the diver went to do not a, what's it called when you land on your belly?
Belly flop?
Wow.
It's a very technical skill too. Yeah. I'm really good at them.
Landed on their back, flat on their back,
ooh,
which a high level diver would never do on accident. So they had gotten in trouble and their punishment was to go on the high dive and do a back flop more or less. Which if you know anything about diving, that is extremely dangerous. You could literally be knocked out and have a concussion, in the pool because of doing that. And, you will see things like that. And it's real weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as Americans stepping into that environment, it was not my place to say anything or do anything, because that's their world. That's how they run things. There was one time, this was not discipline, but some little synchronized swimming children, they were probably 6, were being forced to basically overstretch and were in tears crying because coach is literally holding them down with their leg over their head and the children had no choice but to take it. Because for them to be there at that training center was an incredible honor to them and their family and their village and their town and everything. And that's just what they have to do in order to have a better life. So it's very interesting.
Yeah,
very eye-opening. It made me very appreciative to be an American.
Right. We actually, your freedom and free will.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you can sit on the pole and make noise if you want.
Yeah, I can get on Google and see, like, you know, I can look things up and have freedom of and access of information. Yeah.
Now, how old were you when you were traveling over there?
Just 29. Oh, okay. Yeah, it wasn't too long ago.
Yeah. Now, did you feel safe in that environment?
Most of the time, yes. There were a couple of instances when I was out and about in the city, and I got videotaped a lot being there, because in Tianjin there's very, very little,
like Westerners.
In Florida, I don't have any words today. I'm sorry. Everyone is Chinese, everyone. And so when I would see someone who was not Chinese, it was really exciting because you know the bulk is Chinese. But there was one situation where I was headed to the airport and we would get a driver. So they hired a driver for me. I get in the van, I was by myself. And the driver is literally filming me sitting in the back seat. And I'm like, is this really happening right now? Like, Of course I'm in China. My phone isn't turned on to data because it's extremely expensive. And I'm like, dude, if I don't make it to the airport, no one is going to know. Like, it is going to take so long because the airport at that time didn't have accessible Wi-Fi to anything that was not a Chinese phone number. So it would have taken until I got to Incheon in Seoul, South Korea, until I was able to get a hold of anyone. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, I'm going to take the fee, you know, turn my roaming on. I texted a couple people and just like, hey, if you don't hear from me within, you know, X amount of time, like, please reach out to, you know, the information. Because it was really, really unnerving. And I didn't realize until the third trip that I didn't know how to say, like, help, I'm in trouble in Mandarin.
Probably good to learn that on the first one.
Yes. Yeah. Like, that probably would have been a really good thing to know going into all of this. Because a lot of people there did not speak English. It was not a big business city. So I would have had to know Mandarin in order to get help.
Yeah.
I'm no alive. Kidding. I'm here.
Yeah, yes, you are. Okay.
Yes.
Well, good job. And that's a good little tip for everyone. You know, basics, like I say, keeping it simple, like learning simple phrases can go a long ways. Plus, when you're showing respect to the culture, you know, you're turning what could potentially be a foe into a friend just by merely trying, right?
Trying.
And they will appreciate that. Exos. Mm-hmm. So are you still working for Exos?
I am. Okay. Yeah. So I've been with Exos for almost 7 years now. I, of course, was at our performance institutes there in Frisco, which is where we work together. Yeah. I'm currently on a contract for the U.S. military in Seattle, working on base, helping train soldiers, get them strong, get them moving well, and really focus on longevity for them. That's not something that 22-year-olds tend to focus on, is, you know, what's ahead of me in 5 years or 10 years. So really trying to get them to take care of their bodies and get them strong and powerful and moving well. That's what we're focused on now.
Yeah, no, it's a great turn that, God, I don't know where in my career it started, but the first time I was exposed to it is I got to the East Coast, got to Damneck, and the Tier 1 commands had contracts with, at the time it was API, before you guys changed your name to Exos. And I first time I went to an API, I think it was in I want to say Scottsdale.
Yeah, that's our headquarters
down there. Yeah. And so showed up there and it was like, you know, a 4-week deal. Uh-huh. And it was the tactical athlete program. And the beauty of it was you did your morning workout, then classes, like, okay, basic nutrition. This is your skeleton, is anatomy and physiology. It kind of took you down to ground level, learning things that you kind of sort of already knew, but it was great to kind of get dive in a little deeper and then into the kinesiology of all of this stuff, right? And then when you were done, you'd go to lunch, come back, some more classes, and then you would roll into your second workout of the day. And then the whole time there, you know, there's these shakes and supplements always waiting for you with your name on them. And
it made you feel fancy.
It is. It was like,
it's about taking care of you. But that's the great thing about this company is it's all about the person. It's, you know, we do the best we can to get you to your goals. I don't go to work every day for me. I don't go to work for Jamie. I go to work because I love to help support other people. And that's what fulfills me is, you know, caring for others and giving to others and being selfless. I've been told that I am a little bit too endearing at times, but I can't help it. And it really just, it fits with where I'm at.
Yeah, no doubt. And I from what I know, the program, you know, it expanded obviously out of the Tier 1 to more conventional forces. And now You're having to, I feel really sorry for you that you're having to hang out with Army guys all day long, but you know,
it's a whole different world. That is for sure.
Yeah. They all know exactly what I'm talking about. They'll actually agree with me. Like, yep, I know, Clint, you're right. Yeah, we're kind of, we're different. We're very different. So yeah, now you're up there in Washington dealing with that. And, so how have you found it? Like, you went from dealing with professional athletes, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you and I were sitting there, you're working me out with other pros, and you know, remember what's her name? It was going to the Olympics for skateboarding, and she ended up actually doing really well, right?
That was awesome.
Yeah, now you're kind of in this pretty much 100% military. You go from the pros, mm-hmm. not me, of course, but everyone else around us, and then you go now to 100% military. How's that transition been?
It's been very interesting. It was not what I expected. I think the hardest thing has been how hard-headed the military is about change.
Yeah.
As we all know, change is hard. It's super hard.
Yeah.
And where we're really able to make the impact is with our lower ranking individuals, because in 5-10 years, they're going to be the ones who are calling shots. So that's where we're really trying to make our largest impact and speak to them. And that's who we are also training most of the time during PT, is your E1s, E2s, E3s, E5s and up. Don't really have to come to PT if they don't want to, and they really won't get in trouble. But what we found to be the biggest impact that we're making is for these soldiers to just have a civilian to talk to who's a little bit more on the outside and who will give them the time and attention and just listen.
Yeah.
I have a co-coach, and we're assigned to the same battalion. And our office is great. And we wanted it to be welcoming. We wanted people to come in and hang out and talk to us, because that creates relationships and builds buy-in. And that's what we really need right now is buy-in and helping to create our change. So this week, actually, we have not gotten much done because we've had soldiers coming in every day and just talking, telling us about their families, telling us about like someone's mother just died a couple weeks ago. And he started therapy and started talking to us about therapy and just being so extremely open, and how refreshing it seems almost for them that we are here to listen and to be here for them, and to not care what their rank is and to not care what their overall really like job description is or what shit they might have gotten into as to why they're in the Army perhaps. Yeah. So that's been really cool.
Huh.
When it comes to, say, working with pro athletes, of course, they have to work on their bodies in order to do their job, right?
Yeah.
Of course, these soldiers are also having to do that. Obviously, we want a strong, you know, military force supporting America. But they have to be there for PT. They don't get a choice. And they have to do, you know, their X, Y, Z things throughout the day. And it doesn't matter if they're in a good mood or a bad mood, you know, what have you, they have to go and do it. And so when they can come in and kind of vent to us and unload and get a different perspective on life, apart from everyone else who's just like them on base, we've seen some really, really cool, like switches flip almost in the time that we've been out here.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's important people know Exos, you know, they're really doing the same thing no matter who they work with. It's all about increasing the longevity of whether it's a professional athlete or a professional warrior. And it doesn't surprise me that there's some hard-headedness. It took a long time for even the special operations community to start embracing more of what you guys preach in that human performance world. And heck, it took us forever just to start using the words HP, right? I mean, there's always, oh, PT, I got to go PT. And that's push-ups, pull-ups, you know, and it's all good stuff. But the military never evolved. It was always, you know, it's whatever's in boot camp is kind of almost like, okay, well, or buds, or if you, whatever you did, that became your norm. And that's what you did for 20 years. I remember having my first chief in my platoon was a Marine who then got out of the Marines, came in the Navy to be a SEAL.
Interesting. Okay.
But he was still a Marine. Uh-huh. And everything was just push-ups. I mean, that's all he would do is push-ups. And he was one of those, when he's doing the push-ups, he's looking at his bicep while he's doing it. You know what I mean?
And, it's a great view, though. That's a nice angle.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I'm looking at it. I'm not doing it. Right. And then, you know, it was all old school, like straight up PT. You think of military PT. And it's, anyway, it took a long time for especially some of us older guys to go, what is all this like human performance crap, mm-hmm. you know, because when you're starting it, it's not as intense, right? Uh-huh. As like a morning PT with all your buddies. It's actually, it slowly kind of gets to a mm-hmm. gallop and it's spread out over time. And that's because, oh, that's right. We're trying to prevent injury. We mm-hmm. want you to recover in a timely manner, you know, but it took a long time for people to realize, oh, wait,
right.
So
you
in 20
trust
years,
the process. You got to trust the process. And a big issue with where we're at now is just like you said, we have these old school people who are still in charge and they don't know any different. Like you don't know what you don't know. So they have no idea what is possible with mm-hmm. human performance on base. They're not going to know that, you know, this is better than what has previously been done because they don't know what better is. Mm. And so that's a big part of us high level coaches coming in and providing examples of what our footprint could look like as a gym, of providing examples of, you know, what happens when we include stretches into our training, like what that does for us and really educating on why we're doing the exercises we're doing.
Yeah.
Because for me, I hate to do something that I don't know why I'm doing it, as a lot of people are like that. And so when I'm speaking to like my command, I have to be very big on my education side and explain this is why we're doing it. This is where it's going to get us. You know, this is where we're at now. And we need to be able to bridge that gap. And so these are the things we're going to do in order to bridge that gap and stay healthy while we're doing it. Because if we're not healthy, we can't go and fight a war, or we can't go step on a field and play in the Super Bowl. So it all comes down to, being healthy, having that longevity mindset, and education. And again, caring about people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the proof is in the pros. You guys have trained those guys and you've got NFL. I mean, it doesn't matter. Football, baseball, basketball. You have guys now playing. What used to be an old man in professional sports, you know, they get into their late 20s or early 30s, he's the old guy. Now you got a bunch of them now playing in their 30s. Uh-huh. I mean, and you have, you know, somebody like Brady, who's what, 60? You know,
he's basically, he's like dog years, you know, football's like dog years. He's been in for 3 years. Like, oh, dude, 72.
Right. And every team he goes to, he's, you know, he's walking away with a Super Bowl trophy he gets older. It's crazy.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. The proof is in the pros. That's all the military needs to know, because these are folks with 90 million plus, you know, dollar contracts, you know, and that's just like getting started.
Right. Yeah.
We will be right back after the break. Who was that guy that we were training with that like signed his big ol'? He's a huge like lineman guy, remember? And the day he was like, I just signed
like
50 million or 60 million. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yep.
That is insane. Such bullshit.
real crazy.
Why can't the military sign a $90 million contract?
What's really weird is when our NFL combine guys get drafted and sign their rookie contracts. We worked with Jamar Chase last year, and he went first round and has had an incredible season, has a big game on Sunday, but seeing the contract that this 21-year-old is signing, and you're just like, this is ridiculous. I will never see that amount of money in my life. But like, you go, man, like that is fucking awesome. So they worked their asses off, but
yeah, you've run how many combines have you run now?
Six. I've worked with six.
Yeah. And you're seeing those kids come in. And I mean, I saw what Exos did during this COVID issue. Mm-hmm. You guys kind of ran your own.
We did. Yeah.
That went really well, right?
It went awesome.
Yeah.
We actually had the largest one in Dallas. We used University of North Texas's indoor facility, which is beautiful. We ran, we had almost 50 guys that year. And I almost all of them ran in our pro day, and we had actual guys, scouts who are usually at the combine and have, you know, measured people's wingspans and done their verticals and timed the stopwatches and everything. They came to our facility and helped facilitate that. And
that's
it was
awesome.
A really, really cool experience. And being able to see the fulfillment and the 2 months of intense training come to fruition, it was a really, really neat thing to be a part of.
Yeah, it was busy. That's when I was coming in. That place was
busy.
Just nothing but these incredible, like, massive kids.
Yeah, but really, they are
like,
children.
What the fuck are you people eating? Jesus. And they're ripped. Yeah. You know? I'm like double their age just trying to keep up, but that wasn't even happening. Exos. So if, for those of you just now learning about Exos, you really should check them out, especially if you've got one in your area. Mm-hmm. You know, they're far and few between, but, you know, they're worth it. They are worth, you know, here locally, you know, I've had the privilege of training at them several times, but being a retired guy, going in there and getting things squared away again, because I've done that several times. You go in, you get squared away, you leave, you come back all broken. Get squared away. It's what I do. But they had like these other like group, what'd you call when you just the civilians, anybody who wants to pay, they can come in. And...
Yeah. So that's, our active adults. It's our rally program.
Yeah.
They're so much fun because as an adult who's working a normal job, you don't need to go and train like an athlete. But the people who want to do that is a really special type of person. A lot of them were past athletes in college, or high school, or a lot of them are really high performers themselves within their own profession. We had a lot of, tech business owners. We had a lot of, like corporate people who built up their own businesses.
Yeah.
So really like Exos caters to that high performer, regardless of what that performance is that you do. And a really, really cool thing about those programs is they tend to overlap with our professional programs. It's like our noon adult group overlaps with our NFL group, and seeing those two different parties form relationships and take each other out for lunch and help build connections is one of my favorite things about that facility. Like, and you got to train with an Olympic skateboarder. Like, what are the odds of that? It was so super cool. And just seeing how people overlap and work together and, create bonds and help each other out. It's an awesome, awesome environment.
It really was. Yeah. I mean, anytime you go in there, it's elite. It's elite people. Mm-hmm. And it makes you want to perform, you know, hard and fast.
Yeah.
And, even if you end up, you know, pulling a groin or something like I do, but it's okay. It's worth it. It was worth it. I swear. Cause I taught those 20-year-olds a thing or two. Not really. Okay. So let's go into you and your, you know, I know that you're built like a freight train. I do remember that. And so what is your favorite? Like, do you have a favorite like HIIT routine or workout that you kind of jerk your go-to?
I love working legs. I love legs. I'm fairly strong. So if my like perfect workout would be probably some hang cleans, followed by some deadlifts, maybe some front squats mixed in there. You know, little rear foot elevated lunges, little single leg RDLs, really anything where I'm doing under 4 reps and going really heavy is my bread and butter.
That's your happy spot, huh?
Yep. That's what I love to do. If you ask me to do more than 5, I'm going to complain.
Yeah. So for the two females listening, what do you recommend? Because, you know, these small waistline, big butts, all this that's kind of trending. And I'm sure you get asked this all the time. What is the exercise that... Is there one that really kind of hits it all, or is it you got to do all these things in order to build that lower?
That's a good question. So you have multiple muscles in your glutes, right? You have your glute max, which is the big G. You have your glute minimus and medius, which play really important jobs in how your leg rotates. One thing that I've really been wary of is when females only do glute work. They'll go into the weight room and just do glutes and not work on anything else.
Yeah.
And your body is just like anything else, like too much of a good thing is a bad thing. And you need balance. So for me, I'm not someone who's like, yeah, let's go in and hit a really heavy glute workout. Like, no, you also need to work on your hamstrings. You also need to work on your groin. You also need to work on your quads. You also need to work on your core. And guys also really like how a nice back looks on a woman. You got to hit everything, in my opinion. But if you're going to go with one exercise that is going to work total body as well as your glutes, front squats or like a trap bar deadlifts are really, really good exercises that hit a lot of your body, including your core, including your arms. So that those would be two.
So a track bar, right, you're talking like a Smith machine. Is that a track bar?
No, track bar, like the hex bar.
Oh, the track bar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cause that works your grip strength, which works your shoulders, works your core. And in that trap bar, you're getting both glute and hamstring and quad in that trap bar deadlift position. So you're not just targeting your glute. I'm not fully answering your question because I don't want to. Yeah.
No, I got it. I know. But, there's no such thing. It's kind of like saying, okay, is there a diet just for my belly fat?
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't target it.
Nope.
Yeah. You got to do a little bit of everything. No, I think that works. I mean, deadlifts are incredible.
They're a very good exercise.
Mm-hmm. If I'm doing that, it's weird to say, like I work out, but I don't have this heavy regiment thing. So if I'm not in it, then I don't like them. But when but once I'm in, then I'm like, oh yeah, I love it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's always that, okay, I got to get started on this again. And
well, you get working out is an addiction. It really is. And not only is it something that you have to build this habit in order to want to go and do, but you have to build a habit in order to get your addiction going. And when I'm not working out consistently, I don't want to work out. Like if I'm not in the gym 3 to 4 times a week, I'm like, I can go read a book instead or, you know, go on a walk. So it's one of those things where you have to find that discipline in order to hold yourself accountable and train on a regular basis. But once you start and you give it 2 to 3 weeks and you're consistent in there and you realize, hey, this feels great, I feel good, that's when you get hooked. And usually the first 2 weeks are what's the hardest because you're sore. But you got to push through.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're ringing the same bell. I always tell people, you know, when they ask, hey, you're a Navy SEAL, what's your, I'm like, oh God, but just cause we're SEALs doesn't mean we know shit about working out. But I do know one thing, you have to put yourself first. Mm-hmm. You have to put yourself first each day, meaning whether it's the healthy meal, it's the workout, it's all those things. Cause if you don't put yourself first and do it at the beginning of the day, then the odds are it will never get done, you know?
Yeah.
And that's my, there you go, people. That's my New Year's resolution for you. Put yourself first. It's not about being selfish. It's just getting those things under your belt and you'll have a much happier day for it. Let's see here. So kind of getting in you have a master's degree, right? What is it in?
My master's degree is in post-secondary and higher education. Doesn't really have a ton to do with my actual profession, but I could go be an athletic director at like college, could be pretty cool.
Yeah. So tell us about, you know, that function of cognitive and behavioral psychology piece that I think when we did some research here, the growth mindset and why it's important.
That's a big question.
Go ahead.
I didn't study for this. So one thing that tends to get people digging a rut for themselves is they get complacent. Mm-hmm. You get comfortable. You like where you're at because it can get easy. But what we need to realize is this is the only life we have. And if we're bored, it's our own fault. You have to continue to better yourself in multiple ways, whether that is at my job or whether that is at finding things that keep me interested in things that keep my life evolving in a way that is up. It's not just going to be flatlined. So within a growth mindset, really for me that I have been working on is finding, okay, what are my priorities and what makes me happy? That's been a really big shift in my life in moving from Dallas out here to Seattle. Was I came here for a better work-life balance. I came here for the personal side of my life and being able to explore what is time outside of work. Mm-hmm. I was used to working 10 to 12 hours a day, almost every day, and not really having much time for anything else, in order to grow outside of work. I was like, this is not a life. Like, I'm at work all the time. Like, I loved it, but I didn't get to do much more than that.
Yeah.
So I took this huge leap and moved out here to Seattle, where I can hike and I can kayak and I can learn to snowshoe like I did a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I can go and do all these incredible things and really be able to learn who I am and learn what my priorities are and learn, like, is this what I want to do? And that's really scary to do. It's really hard for people to want to push themselves and get out of their comfort zone, because it's challenging and you have to actually think. And it's a lot easier for people to not think and to not dive introspectively and ask yourself questions. And, it can be scary because you don't always like the answer that you get about yourself. So with that growth mindset, it needs to be about, like, A, for me, what makes you happy? Because ultimately the things that set you up to be happy tend to be the things that set you up to be successful as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really just get out of your comfort zone. As much as that is like a cliche thing to say, you have to do it and really you have to get past what is causing that fear for you, whether it be rational or irrational, and how can you overcome that fear? And typically that fear is going to be from the fear of failure or the fear of the unknown. But you have to go out there and, you know, answer the questions to what is that unknown. You just got to do it. You got to suck it up and do it, really.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think a couple of things that resonate with me that you said. Number one, the comfort zone thing. I remember training with this MMA coach, fighter coach down in Florida. And it was when I was in, they sent us down there. We hung out with him for a couple of weeks. And he called it touching the curtain, right? And behind the curtain is always, it's that unknown. It's like that place that you're never going to get to see, but you should always strive to touch the curtain in your workouts or with everything you do in life. And it usually means you have to be, in his world, it was like right when we're probably about, you know, 1 minute away from dying was touching the curtain because he would just destroy us.
Very ideal. Yeah.
You're like, what the hell? You know, and you're on a Stairmaster with weights on running as mm-hmm. fast as possible, you know, and that's after the workout and after being in the ring, you know, with him. And it was, you know, if you weren't touching the curtain at the end of the day, then you didn't work out.
Yeah.
And that was kind of his mentality, but it applies to somewhat same as what you're saying. You got to get uncomfortable in order to mm-hmm. figure some stuff out. And then the other piece that you said, passion, like that passion piece. My dad used to always say, you know, find what you're passionate about. Cause if you're passionate about, then you'll probably be happy. If you're happy, then you'll be good at it. And if you're good mm-hmm. at it, the money will follow. Mm-hmm. Cause most people try to just chase down the money.
They do. Doesn't work.
But the reality is you gotta be passionate. Then you'll be good at it. And if you're good at it, then the money will follow. So
yeah, I like that.
Yeah. You got a lot of similarities there. And then the last piece is, you know, you were talking about being uncomfortable, and that's the point in this interview where we're at for you, because we need to see if you can survive this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So now it's time for you to be uncomfortable. All right. Are you ready for your hypothetical survival scenario?
I am.
You're listening to Can You Survive This Podcast? Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and share on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. All right, here we go. This is specially made for you, I think.
Okay.
All right, here we go. I've got this screen here, so if you were sitting with me, it's like a game show, but you're not, so you're virtual. So here we go. You're just going to have to listen.
Okay.
For this scenario, a client has flown you out or down to California to help him train for a difficult event that he has coming up. Okay. You'll be in town for 1 week. Okay. You're staying at a modest single-story home. Okay. It's your first night in town. The job starts tomorrow. You're getting ready for bed when suddenly everything starts violently shaking. Okay. So, your first question, right? You're getting ready for bed. Everything starts shaking. Do you A, identify a safe zone, or B, call 911?
Identify a safe zone.
There you go. And because it's California, we all know that they're like 100 years overdue, some crazy earthquakes. Actually, they're just overdue. But yeah, it's supposed to be a big one whenever it does come. So yes, you're right. You know, identify the safe zone. Safe zones are sturdy pieces of furniture, structural sound places like the inside corners of a room, interior walls. You want to stay away from, obviously, glass and windows. And anything else that could fall on you. So after identifying your safe zone, do you A, put it on the screen here, do you A, lie down next to the sturdy piece of furniture, such as the couch or a table, or go stand in a door frame? Now, this may get you. Some people have heard
go things. Stand in a door frame.
Really?
No.
No. It is A.
You stay by the sturdy piece of furniture.
The whole door frame thing doesn't really apply. It's a misconception, unfortunately. But you've obviously heard it. I know I'd heard it at one point. But yeah, the door frame is really not providing you any protection.
When you think about it, yeah, it's definitely not as big as my body. The door frame would only cover about this much of my head.
So, that's right. Yeah.
See where you're going.
That's right. So often door frames are not reinforced, but laying down next to something really big and sturdy and is bigger than you, if anything falls, it's going to hit that thing first and not hit you, which is the goal. And you're kind of creating a, if you will, this triangle, you know. Yeah, the third piece of the triangle isn't there yet. There's your body, there's the obstacle, and then you're just waiting for whatever else is to fall to create the rest of that triangle. But that's kind of what you're going for. So now you're laying next to this big ass piece of furniture that you've got in your little modest single story, and the initial shaking has stopped, right? So do you A, grab a go bag and supplies, or just run outside?
I grab my go bag and
your
supplies.
Go bag.
Yes.
That, we talk about go bags all the time around here. Yes. Go bags are, it's important to have something. It can be a bag. It can be a backpack. It can, you know, something that's always put within arm's reach. You know where it's at. The rest of the family knows where it's at. Because really the leading cause of death in an earthquake is falling debris. That is the reason why you do not want to just go run aimlessly everywhere. Toppling trees, power lines, there's a whole lot of danger outside. So sometimes it's not the best decision, especially after the first big violent shake. So yes, a go bag, it's got, what I always say is put life support items in it. That's, you know, your water, your food, you got bartering systems when crises happen. So, you know, it could be cash, could be gold, or it could be, you know, maybe some first aid stuff. But you get the point. You want that anything that provides survivability. And it's good to plan for about, you know, 72 hours, give or take, because 911 is going to be really busy. All right. So you grab some items. You move towards the exit at the rear of the home and pass through the laundry room on your way to the back door. Do you A, keep moving and get the hell out of there, or B, stop for a second, okay, and turn off the gas, electricity, and circuit breakers?
In multiple choice, you always go with the longer answer. So
we
go B.
Well, look at you, a true student. Yes, B, you are correct. You know, this question in theory could go either way, you know, but another one of those leading causes of disaster following an earthquake is fire caused by all the gas leaks. So you're not just helping yourself, you're kind of helping out the neighborhood in your own way. So we say, hey, you know, if you got 5 seconds, go ahead and turn everything off to make that property safe for, you know, others. This will also be one less potential problem for first responders to have to deal with. Now you're about to exit the home when there's another aftershock. This time, you tumble over, you fall over, and debris and rumble comes down on top of you, okay? So, do you A, use all your strength, you are very strong, push all the rubble and debris off and escape, like you're Superman or something, or B, slowly crawl and make your way towards the light, slowly removing debris and rubble?
B. Slowly.
B, the longer answer.
That's not why.
Yes, B, slowly crawl and make your way. Well, this is all about energy, right? Mm-hmm. Maintaining somewhat of, you know, if you start trying to really start pressing and pulling and pushing and giving it all you got, you and I both know you're going to run out of gas. Yep. So removing things slowly. One, you don't want to expend all your energy. And also, you don't know yet if what's on top of whatever it is that's, you know, there. If it's load bearing, then don't touch it because it's probably holding a bunch of other weight off of you. And if you go trying to push, pull it and get all crazy with it, you might just make things worse for yourself. Okay. So as you slowly remove material, you find yourself stuck, trapped under too much immovable debris. So do you A, blow the whistle you grabbed, okay, in your little go bag, or B, scream for help as loud as you can?
Definitely A, my whistle. Less energy expenditure.
That's right. And people can hear it, especially dogs. Screaming will exhaust you. And by the way, it's all of that breathing you'd be doing, screaming, and all that debris, they don't go well together. So maintaining a nice light breath, you know, while you're suffocating slowly is a good idea. Okay. You use the whistle and a neighbor comes and pulls you out. Okay. You have blood on your face and on your hands. Do you A, search for peroxide and some bandages, or B, get the hell out of the building?
B.
I'm going to go with B. Get the hell out of the building. Yes, you're right. Look at you. You're crushing it. Okay. If the area was safer, we would say, yeah, you would address the wound first. But it's not. You're basically what I call on the X, and your job is to get off the X. It's the place of crisis. And aftershock just buried you, so you and the building, you know, obviously unstable. So first, you get the hell out and out of the unsafe. You're outside. You have a rental car nearby. Across the street is an open soccer field. Do you A, get in the car and drive away, or B, go to the soccer field?
B, wide open space.
There we go. The roads are likely gridlock. I mean, where are you in California again? So, yeah, it's gridlock. You know, people are crazy. They're everywhere. Yeah, the car probably wouldn't get you very far anyway. You also have a head injury, that blood and that you have, you know, so yeah, you're probably not in a place to be driving anything. When falling debris is an issue, it's a good rule of thumb to get to those open areas because it's the safest place to be. You know, nothing's going to fall on you anytime soon. And if something's coming, you're going to see it coming. A soccer field's a great place. You're now in the open field. You feel another rumble, and now it's a sinkhole, and it begins to open up right there on the soccer field, okay? To your right is a large grassy hill. To your left is a parking lot. Do you A, go to the parking lot, or B, go to the hill?
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. We're going to say the hill.
The hill. B. Let's see. Let's see what it says. Yes. Go to the high ground, right? Go to the high ground. Okay. You're now on top of the hill. The blood is now coming down out of your head. Nearby, you see a bridge. And across the bridge, you see an ambulance stage. Okay. So it's in help is in sight. All right. So, do you A, signal to the ambulance from where you're at, or B, cross the bridge and approach the ambulance?
Signal.
Signal. Why? Why would you pick such a thing?
If there are bridges and earthquakes, that doesn't seem like a good combination.
Exactly. Yes, a bridge is not a good idea. An earthquake, you got to at least be have your thinking cap on. Knowing what's going on around you, what just happened, taking in the clues and cues that are in all these different crisis environments is the most important thing you can do, because a lot of times people just make bad fucking decisions and then they wonder why they end up dead, injured, or, you know, drinking out of a straw for the rest of their life. Hey, guess what? You have survived this podcast.
Yes.
Good job, Jamie.
Thank you.
Yes.
I tried.
Yes. Okay, so for those of you that want to learn more about you, follow you, whatever they want to do, where can people find you and find out more about you?
Yeah, social media. So my Instagram is really the only thing that I use. On Instagram, I am Coach Jamie, but Jamie is J-A-I-M-I-E. So it's two I's, like my face. But yeah, Instagram, Coach Jamie, I'm on there. Feel free to DM me, message me. I post a lot of exercise videos. I've been very blessed to be around incredible people within this field. I've been very thankful and lucky to learn from some of the best out there. And I feel as though I owe other people in the community the information that I have gained. So I do my best to educate and share that information on a free platform, because not everyone is as fortunate as I am to be able to have access to that information.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You are very experienced. Everyone that's listening, she's a pro at her job, a master of her craft. You can find her at Coach Jamie. And like she said, that's J-A-I-M-I-E on Instagram. Go check her out. I think I'm following her, so that might be the easy button to go to my list and or who I'm following and follow from there, just in case you forget. Jamie, thanks for being on the show. It was awesome hanging out with you.
Yes.
And like I always say, keep it simple, because crisis will complicate the rest. And until next time, be safe out there. Can You Survive This Podcast is a production of Calvary Audio and iHeartMedia. Recorded live from a secure location here in Dallas, Texas. Produced by Brandon Morgan, Jeff Apple, and Clint Emerson. Executive produced by Keegan Rosenberger and Dana Brunetti. For Calvary Audio, I'm Clint Emerson.